If you hold a position of leadership and you're not talking about violence against law enforcement in this country, you have disqualified yourself from being taken seriously.
Hey guys, check out the 2023 Street Cop Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, Gaylord Convention Center. It's going to be the event of the year. Keynote speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Medal of Honor recipient, Navy SEAL Jason Redmond, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Marine Corps Special Forces and Leadership Coach Cody Alford, Sheriff Wayne Ivey, Sheriff David Clark, and Sheriff Mark Lamb. It's going to be one hell of an event. And on top of that, we have all of our instructors and additional instructors from other companies going to be at the event, giving you everything they know for you to have a successful career and get the results you want to get in the field as a police officer. On top of attending the event, you'll get face-to-face time with every instructor attending the event, and all the keynote speakers will spend time with you. We got special events all week, giveaways, nightlife. It's going to be really, really worth your time, energy, and effort. I promise you, you will not regret it for a second. To register for the conference, check out streetcop.com, click conference, and everything you need will be there on the homepage. If you are looking for a room, just click book a room. The block has been sold out at the Gaylord Opryland Convention Center, but there are many hotels nearby within a walking distance of the event. You don't want to miss out on this opportunity. We will see you there.
You training to be a street cop?
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. My name is Dennis Bonino, and I got to tell you, I think today's going to be a banger. I predicted it. It's going to be a fucking banger. And if I'm Italian and fuck up your name, Joe, you have the right to defriend me immediately because it would be just an insult to our ancestors. But we have with us today, Joe Gamaldi. Did I get it right?
Oh, boom. You got it.
Come on, dude. If I got that, I'm Bonino, right? So people fuck that up all the time. It's rare that somebody actually takes a look at it through the lens of Sicily and says, how do I say this name? But
well, normally they go the Grimaldi route. They always try to throw the R in there and they're like, oh, you're related to the pizza people. I go, no, I don't get any of that money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you got a nice office, it looks like.
Thank you. Yeah, it took me a little while to get a nice setup, but I got a good one over here.
So tell us who you are, Joe, for the people that don't know who you are, which is not many, because you're a pretty popular guy in the law enforcement community.
Well, my name is Joe Gamaldi. I'm the National Vice President of Fraternal Order of Police. I've been a police officer for 18 years, started my career in the NYPD. I did 3 years there and, got tired of living in, the shoebox apartment that's so small when you open your bedroom door, it hits your bed. Yeah, I got tired of that. So I transferred down to the Houston Police Department and I'm still down here now. I'm an active night shift patrol sergeant. So I still go out there, put the uniform on, ride the streets every single night. Still only sleeping like 4 hours a night, drinking ghost energy drinks to keep going and pounding coffee. But, I'm making it and I'm here with you today. So now I'm excited to be here.
Well, dude, I think you're getting a lot of national notoriety, not because of the FLP thing, but because of your bravado and your chops to actually speak up and speak the fucking truth. And I think that's probably what brought us here today. I always find people very similar to me in our podcast in the same room and a bromance occurring on top of the fact that you're Italian. I'm from New Jersey. You're from New
York.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up on Long Island, Suffolk County, on the east end of Long Island.
Yeah, dude. So I have family on Long Island, right? I'm super familiar with it. I fucking hate going there because of the traffic. I might have to go. I'm flying to Athens in June, so I might have to go to JFK. And I'm like, can I get a I might be better off taking a rowboat to JFK Airport from New Jersey and making it there faster.
At least you're not going to LaGuardia, which I believe has been under construction since I was born. And they just haven't completed it. It just continues.
The Belt Parkway. Is there ever not construction on the Belt Parkway?
There's never not traffic on the Belt Parkway. And in fact, I used to work in East New York, Brooklyn, which is like the armpit of Brooklyn, leads the city every year in murders. And I used to have to drive the Belt Parkway. And there's always traffic. It doesn't matter. 3:30 in the morning on Christmas Day, there's going to be traffic.
Yeah. But anyway, back to speaking up about the right thing. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, I had started speaking up pretty vocal before I became the national vice president of the FOP. And, one of the reasons I finally decided to run, because it wasn't something I was necessarily interested in doing stuff on the national level, was I just felt like we didn't have a voice. We're getting our teeth kicked in every single day in the media. I mean, we're just getting the shit kicked out of us all the time. And nobody was speaking up for us. We had all these police chiefs that would go on there and they would always play it safe. And then we had these celebrity retired chiefs who just wanted to continue to get their next book deal or go on the next speaking tour. And nobody was actually giving an unfiltered version of what the rank and file police officer was feeling every single day. So my whole goal in every interview I do or any podcast or anything like that is just, I want the regular officer who's sitting in a patrol car right now to be like, damn, that's exactly what I wanted to say, or that's exactly what I want someone representing me to be thinking, because that's what we're all thinking. And for whatever reason, we had gotten away from that. And I'm so proud. One of the things I'm proudest of is that we have finally taken our voice back, and we actually have rank and file police officers speaking for us instead of, as I said, you know, the celebrity police chiefs who are just worried about keeping their jobs and staying in the national eye and not really worried about standing up and speaking up for officers.
I believe, and I don't want to go down this rabbit hole if you don't want to go there. Do you guys have a new chief now, or you have the same chief you had for a long time?
No, we've had a newer chief now for almost a year and a half.
Okay. And you don't have to speak on that behalf, but I got to tell you, I distinctly remember your old chief. And Houston is a place where you guys get fucking lose cops all the time. It's wild.
Yeah. Like,
Houston is one of those places that is always getting a police officer killed in the line of duty, and it's awful to watch. But I remember watching a few years ago, and this is not your current chief, your previous chief, literally taking the death of one or two of your police officers. And I'm not trying to do a disservice to the men and women that made the sacrifice, because I can't remember the names of them, because there's unfortunately hundreds every year. And if you're not relatively close to New Jersey, it's hard for me to retain nationally everybody's names. But I believe one or two of your police officers were killed in line of duty, murdered by gunfire, and your chief came out and started pushing a political agenda on their death. And I said to myself, look at this piece of shit. How the fuck did this guy become a chief? Now, I know how he became a chief, but I just remember thinking, like, you fucking disgrace. I would walk on that stage and rip that fucking badge off of your fucking, what a disgrace.
It happened at the funeral home when the body had just been transported there. And he had a press conference in front to talk about gun control. And you know, so one of the things that I do when I make these arguments is I believe in making passionate, fact-based arguments, because that's how you're going to move the needle with folks. Because I'll tell you right now, if you just sit there and give them statistics in a little monotone voice, everybody tunes out. Nobody's listening. Like, think about how people watch TV nowadays. They sit and they scroll on their phone. They're not even watching what's on the TV. So you have to be passionate in order to hook people and listen to what they have to say, for them to listen. Now, you can't just yell and scream, though, with no facts, because then, congratulations, you're a Black Lives Matter activist. You just yell things out there and you hope, if you're the loudest voice in the room, that everybody's going to believe you. So you have to give them facts. So the frustrating part for me in the situation that you're talking about is that we weren't talking about the fact that that guy that had shot Chris Brewster out there shouldn't have even been free. I believe he was out on bond at the time. We didn't talk about the fact that, how about just, here's a plan, right? We're having a national conversation on gun control, all right, in this country that has raged on for decades, okay? And, you know, we have people on the left who want to take people's rights away. We have people on the right, and they're being arguing forever. Here's a novel idea. Let's enforce the laws that we actually have on the books right now. I don't want to hear about all these new laws that you have ideas for. We're not even enforcing what we have right now. There are literally gang members out there today who are shooting people. They're getting a PR bond. They're getting back out and they're killing someone again. Or there's people who have shot multiple individuals and they're getting deferred adjudication and released right back out. So don't sell me this crap that we need new laws. We're not enforcing the ones we have now. I mean, look at Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, who lets everyone go. There was just a story the other day on the news. We had a guy in Detroit who had already murdered someone. He was out on bond and killed three more people. So just give me a break that we want to take gun violence here in this country seriously when we're not throwing the book at people. And like, who's on the other side of this saying like, oh yeah, I believe somebody who shoves a gun in someone's face shouldn't go to prison for a period of time. Just the far radical left with their idea, you know, their radical ideology. It's not based on any kind of fact or sense. I mean, you made a conscious decision. When you use a gun to rob someone, throw the book at them for 20 years. This shouldn't be a debatable point.
Yeah, and everybody wants to play this. Well, they're misunderstood. Unfortunately.
Give me a break.
Hey, listen, by the way, I'll even correlate this back to, like, I was having this thought this morning as I'm hiring people right now at the company. We've got two new hires, one's coming on in 2 weeks, and another one just got posted today. And sometimes I get people in here that there's nothing I can do with them. They are just this. They're always going to be this. No matter how much time I put into them, I can't change. Like unintelligence.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if you're born unintelligent, you're stuck. Yeah. You know, at least if you're intelligent but raised improperly, there's a hope that you could learn better behavior or new skills. And I just want to say raised improperly. I mean, maybe somebody didn't teach you about how to use your full potential, how to treat others. And that's stuff you can learn as long as you have the intelligence there. So we have to at least admit that these career criminals are career criminals. And albeit there might be some instances where some people deserve another shot, and I believe me, I'm privy to some of those wonderful success ideas, we've got to be able to take a hardline stance at this guy is just, I just watched the first 48 of the day. They had a guy just got out of prison. They had to pull like the book out and like find his case from like 88 when he murdered somebody. And he executed a woman who was pregnant. Jeez. They were managed to save the fucking baby and a man over money. They just brought him to a fucking park and put bullets in their heads and put another one in the dude's head to ensure that he was dead. And this dude was recently paroled like 6 or 9 months earlier. So we look at somebody like this, we have to say to ourselves, what is the repercussions? And you know what it comes down to, Joe? Their family's not impacted by it,
mm-hmm.
right? Mayor Lightfoot doesn't have family members that were murdered in South fucking Chicago out of the 1,000 people that lost their lives last year. It's the same shit with all these fucking politicians. They don't understand what it's like to lose somebody to gun violence. They think the gun's the issue. It's actually not. You couldn't be more correct because we have how many millions, 50 million legal gun owners? There's not 50 million people killing people every single day. We have knife owners. They're not stabbing people, right? So there's not going to be guns. It's going to be knives or bats or shovels. They're going to find a way to commit murder.
And you know, I don't think like the general public has any clue of just how bad it has gotten out here. I mean, in 2021 and 2022, we went over 20,000 homicides in this country. Now, that's actually underreported data because most of the major cities didn't get their crime numbers in. We haven't seen those numbers since the mid-1990s, right? And you will still have journalists, activists, politicians trying to tell people, well, you know, crime really isn't that bad. I mean, they're literally writing stories about how it's really not that bad because it's just murders that are up. I mean, give me a break. But to your point, it's because they're not impacted. They're living in their ivory tower. They got a doorman, you know, that keeps people out. They got gates around their community. They're not worried about this crime. They don't see like the victims firsthand. I mean, we are watching our urban communities be completely destroyed. Victims, families. And you know, when I quote all these statistics, people forget those are fathers, sons, mothers, daughters, families ruined forever because of this violent crime. That is completely preventable. The DC police chief the other day said that the average, you know, the murder suspects that they're getting on, that they're arresting, they have an average of 11 previous arrests. In Chicago, the average is 12 to 13 arrests. Maybe had we thrown the book at that dirtbag prior to this and incarcerated him, that victim would then be alive. And I mean, it's just driving the violent crime rate. Chicago overall violent crime is up 39% over the last 2 years. New York City up 46%. And it's frustrating for me, and it's frustrating for every single police officer across the country, because you know, Dennis, we delivered historic crime reductions back in the early 2000s that led to an urban renaissance. People were living in cities again. They were raising their kids. They felt safe going. Now they're disasters. There's food deserts because all the supermarkets are pulling out. There's financial deserts. People can't get to a bank because every bank is closed. And look at public transportation. Holy shit. You have people open. It's basically just open air drugs on the public transit system. So nobody wants to ride it with their family. They have to because of work. And I still talk to guys back in New York. They dread riding the subway for any reason. But this is what has happened because we've allowed this revolving door criminal justice system. It's a complete failed social experiment. They had no statistical data. All these activists were saying, this is going to make communities safer. This is going to help my minority communities. They had no studies to back it up, and they just rolled with it. And now it has just ruined our communities. And like I said, no statistical data to back it up. Let's just do it. And now that it's been a complete disaster, They're not rolling it back. I mean, it boggles the mind.
You know what I like the best about this conversation is you and I are both not considered minorities, right? But we are two men amongst hundreds, if not thousands of people, it may be even millions, who are more concerned about minority communities than their own minority leaders. And what the problem is guys are electing people and letting decisions be made by people based on the fact that there is a minority correlation. But I got to tell you, you have people like us who are so compassionate, so empathetic, and care so much that the reverse racism that's put in place is actually a detriment to you because now you're suffering. And you have people like Joe, myself, a lot of these chiefs, these sheriffs who care. And if you gave them their support, you would get your lives back. But you don't because you're fooled by these idiots that are saying, I look like you, elect me. What you don't realize is they're doing it for their own benefit. Literally, big business, political favors. That's what they're put in place for. It's not to improve the community. If they were so good at improving the community, why hasn't it improved? How is Lori Lightfoot reelected? And I got a funny feeling that if we actually got answers from God, I'm assuming she was either funded by street gangs or drug cartels, because there's nobody who wants these people more in office to stop the police from stopping crime than your cartels.
Yeah. And you know, the crazy thing too is, as you just mentioned, everything is to help minority communities, right? Well, why is it that the same neighborhoods in Chicago have been struggling for the last, you know, 50 years, 60 years? And it's every urban community. Everybody knows the neighborhoods that are dangerous. And why haven't things got better under, you know, almost universal Democrat rule, by the way? You know, and it has just this revolving door that they've allowed to happen. As I said, impacts on minority communities. Black males are at 12 times the homicide rate than every other person in this country. 12 times the homicide rate. Where is the outrage for that? Where are the marches? Because I assure you, if a police officer shoots someone and then there's an error, there will be marches, there will be demonstrations. But where are the demonstrations for all these young Black men that are being murdered in our communities every single day because of policies that have been put in place by a far left ideology? And you know, it's frustrating. My wife's a woman of color. She's Hispanic. She grew up in the inner city of Houston. I can't even bring my kids to show them where their mother grew up because it's not safe. And I mean, it's just completely ridiculous what we've allowed to happen. And we can fix it though. Now it's going to take probably a generation now at this point because we've allowed it to get this bad, but we can fix it. Go back to embracing broken windows theory. Go back to vehemently prosecuting violent crime. Show them absolutely no quarter for violent criminals. Let's actually fund, support, and train our police officers in how to do proactive police work. And it, you know, it always reminds me of a quote, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but you're going to know what I'm saying when I say it. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men, and weak men create bad times. And that's exactly the cycle that we're watching ourselves go through as a society. We were strong on crime, and it created great communities. It created safe communities. It promoted prosperity for everyone. And we rested on our laurels, and these politicians took advantage. And now we're left in this rotting cesspool in most of our urban communities that people just feel like they're stuck, and crime is through the roof, and people are suffering. It's horrible.
I had a conversation with a chief of police this morning, and I will not name the agency for sure. And he sent me a GIF or GIF, whatever you call it, back and said, when people ask why you're doing this, and the thing says like to piss people off. And I wrote back to him, I said, yeah, for me, it's because humanity deserves it. When you say we can fix it, I have been yelling this from the rooftops for years. And the crazy thing is, we can prove through at least our efforts that we've actually been able to fix it. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I say this all the time. I don't know if you pay attention to any of our stuff. If you don't, I don't find it offensive. I still think we're friends. But I say,
love the memes. I'm a big fan of the memes. I was laughing hysterically the other day when you had the guy looking in the mirror and he see a lizard person for like diming out the people he works with. It was hilarious.
Here's a reveal for the street cop community. I make three memes every time I sit down and make memes in about 10 minutes. I make three of them. and put them up. And most of the time they're bangers and I'm super proud of them. You know, sometimes people get this thing, and I'll come back to my what I was saying, but we can fix it. But people get this impression that I'm anti-administration. And I try to remind people that, like, how am I anti-administration? I'm anti-piece of shit. So yeah. I have friends, I'm literally texting with a chief this morning who was doing some real fantastic stuff. And I said, he goes, I got 3 years to go. And I said, are you going to leave at three? He goes, I'm going to leave when I can ensure that when I leave this place, it won't lose what I've built and make sure the system continues on for years, because what I've done is actually introduce a different style of leadership that's actually working and people here are happy. And there's a rumor about us that people here are happy. So kudos to him. But people get confused. They think it's anti-administration. And you know, it's funny, dude, every single time somebody says to me, and my chief doesn't know that I'm at your class, he doesn't like street cop training. And my response is, I bet you guys don't like your chief. And they go, yeah, we fucking hate him. I'm actually leaving the agency. The reason your chief hates me is because we are calling people out and holding them accountable. We're saying, if you're going to be the chief, that means be the chief. It doesn't mean be the chief yourself. Right. That means the people that you now serve are everybody underneath you and not yourself. So if you are that selfish or don't know how to manage, don't want to relinquish any kind of power to anybody else or misbehave or come after people for bullshit reasons and try to push agendas, and you're not the chief. You're not a leader. You're a manager. You're not the fucking chief. And when I say that and they misbehave towards these people and don't act with compassion, they go, that guy's anti-administration. I am not. I will show you many chiefs and many leaders who are fine examples of what you should be. And I think everyone should follow in their footsteps, because they do not leave, while they're imperfect as human beings, they do not leave their men and women headless at the door while they step on their fucking corpses going to the top.
And, you know, people sometimes kind of say the same thing, like, oh, you know, you criticize police, you this and the other. I go, first of all, there are some amazing chiefs across this country. There's one not too far away in Dallas, Chief Garcia out there. He does a fantastic job, not far from where I am right now. There are some amazing police chiefs out there. But what I ask of every leader in the law enforcement community, whether you're a chief, a union leader, whatever, number one, you need to be speaking out against the violence against law enforcement. That is a non-starter. If you hold a position of leadership and you're not talking about violence against law enforcement in this country, you have disqualified yourself from being taken seriously. Because number one, I don't understand why that's like a controversial topic to even talk about it. Also, because of just how bad it is. We've had 85 police officers shot already this year. We're in the third week of March, right? That's a 57% increase from 2020. Ambush attacks from 2020, same point in time to now, same point in time, 2023, up 100%. We had over 330 police officers shot last year. The year before that, we had 340 police officers shot. And just so everybody understands, if they're not a police officer, when an officer is shot, that means that they were trying to be killed. So it's like we didn't have them dead. It's just thankful that we've gotten better at treating people on the scene. That's if a department even offers their officers tourniquets and things like that. And we've just, technology's gotten better, vests, medical professional, all these other things, right? So violence against us and through the roof. 2021 was the deadliest year for intentional homicides for police officers in 20 years. Every police chief, every leader, get off your ass, talk about the violence against law enforcement. It needs to stay front and center. And if you are a politician, you know what? I don't care whether you're on the right or the left. You need to be speaking up against violence against law enforcement, because it's a stain on our society. And not only that, if these dirtbags are willing to shoot police officers, what do you think they're willing to do to the regular public? So, you know, all I ask, and this is an exceptionally low bar, Dennis, it's not like I'm asking for the world here, is condemn violence against law enforcement every time you see it. Talking to you, President Biden, every time you see an officer shot, would it be too much to send out a tweet and say we condemn violence against law enforcement? What's the press secretary's name? I don't know. She does a horrible job. I can't remember her name. But anyway, she started off a press briefing the other day when there was a reporter shot in Orlando. Rightfully so. That's horrible what happened. But when's the last time they started a press briefer saying it's horrible that another officer was shot dead, that we've had 85 shot this year? We don't see them saying that shit at the press briefing. Of course not. So if you're a police chief, you better be speaking out against violence. And I'm sorry, I'm going slightly off topic here too, but if you're a police chief, I mean, is there any bigger issue right now, you know, other than violence, than recruitment and retention? You need to be surveying your people, figure out the things that are important to them, and don't just do the survey and talk about making changes, do it. So if your guys want 4'10s instead of 5'8s, make it work. If they want to wear beards, approve them. If they want to show tattoos, show them. They want to wear, the tactical vest, let them wear the tongue. Whatever it is that is going to make them happy, oh my God, do it. And here's another thing too. If you are severely understaffed, figure out how your people can still take time off from work. Figure out how they can still have time to decompress. They, you know, there needs to be an entire code. Oh, and another thing too. Can we stop with the suspensions for minor issues? We are still handling discipline like we did 70 years ago in law enforcement. You know, if some young officer forgets to do a report or doesn't put his seatbelt on or something, let's handle that with training instead of giving them a suspension, because the only person you're hurting is the officer's family. Like, let's get with the times.
And that's, you know, I think we could take these things, and I know a lot of people who are teachers, right? So you come to the public entity. And I always tell people, like, in public service, it's so interesting. You can go to the building of any public building and say, knock on the door and go, hey, where's the dumbest guy in this place? And they go, yeah, go upstairs, third floor, right? Well, where's the smartest guy here? He's down here. He's the guy that's been tasked with this. He's the one, the grunt in the field humping it. He's got real solutions, but they don't want to hear it upstairs. And I'm not saying that's always the case, but it's, and I tell, I've warned police officers in my courses that, like, having a brain, having independent thought, knowing how to solve problems, having uncommon sense, which is different than common sense. This is a real struggle as a profession, because the people who for some reason seem to thrive in most of the agencies here are your dullards who are blind, obedient, follow things, don't binary black and white. That's how we do it. That's not how we do it. And it's rewarded for some reason. But the people who know how to actually resolve problems are considered to be out of order, out of line. It's very interesting.
And don't question the way we do things. You know, we've always done it that way. Yeah, that doesn't mean that it's right. It doesn't mean that what you're doing is the right thing just because you've always done it that way. And you know, another thing too, if you are a supervisor, and even if you've got a lot of great ideas and everything else, you owe it to your troops to be positive the best you can and support them, get to know them as people, engage with them, because I don't think anything really matters more right now than to young officers than them knowing that what they do matters and that someone actually cares. You know, I like to say this, and I get pushback from some of the older guys, but I'll say it anyway. It has never been harder to be a police officer than it is right now. I truly believe that. And we're looking at a fantastic generation of police officers. If they're treated right, if you support them, if you give them the resources they need, they will do a fantastic job. They want to be constantly praised for the work they're doing, as well they should. So if at an agency, you're not, you know, putting them in for commendations and thanking them all the time, every single day you should be thanking these guys just for showing up to work, because nobody wants to do this job anymore. And instead, there are some agencies who are disciplining them, or, you know, they showed up and they didn't shine their shoes. Like, give me a break. I'm happy they showed up.
Here's the best thing about this new generation. I'm so impressed with all of them. They're not afraid to leave.
Yeah.
That's my favorite, right? So, like,
yeah,
they're ready to tell the chief, peace out, motherfucker. I'm going six counties over. They're ready to move.
They don't care about the golden handcuffs. They don't care. I'll leave. I'll go somewhere else.
It's the old guys, right? The OT whores, right? I don't know if you saw my meme I put up this morning or last night. I was an OT whore one. It's a sinking ship and four kids in a golf cart.
I saw it. Yeah.
So, you know, dude, and I always tell people, I'm so proud that you guys had the bravado, the heart, the courage to leave this place, because it is your life. You only get but one. And you know, the interesting thing is, I actually was criticized face to face one time from a chief of police who said, I don't think it's really ideal that you tell people to leave agencies. I said, and a guy who can't retain his people like you is the exact type of guy who would say that to me. I go, So while you blame everybody else, I've got a funny feeling, and I've told the story 1,000 times, I've got a funny feeling that you are the problem, but you don't want to admit it. Because the crazy thing is, I know a chief 4 towns away from you guys that make about 30,000 less a year than you do. He hasn't lost anybody yet, but at your agency of 30 men and women, you lose 3 a year. That's 10% of your staff walks off, and they're making 40,000 more than the guy four towns down. And the crazy thing is, half the people that leave you go work for him. So what's the fucking problem? Don't point your finger at me, motherfucker. Yep. Don't point go look in the mirror.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he's not going to look in the mirror and realize maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I'm doing a bad job and that's why everybody, no, it could be that. It couldn't be me. It's got to be something else.
Hey guys, if you're enjoying the Street Cop Podcast, do us a favor and give us a review on iTunes or Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. Tell a friend. We don't charge anything for the episodes. We appreciate your support. Check us out on any social platform by putting into the search bar Street Cop Training. Give us a follow. We have a lot of free content coming out every single day that you might not catch here on the podcast. And it's important for you to be able to do your job more professionally. And we also entertain you as well. You spoke about a tattoo policy earlier. I'm going to say 2 things here. One, I know of a very large state agency that is down 600 to 800 troopers. All right. And they will not forfeit their tattoo policy. They've got thousands upon thousands of applicants that got tattoos before they decided to be cops and now can't be cops at the agency they want to be working for because 3 dudes with gray hair at the top are stuck on a tattoo policy, which is fucking flabbergasting. I'm going to throw one more in on top of beards, tattoos, and out of vest carriers. Is the college degree requirement, which I think is a fucking joke as well.
Yeah, and a lot of agencies, what they're doing now, and it's a good idea, is doing work experience requirement instead of like college. So you could have college, or you could have held down a full-time job for the last 3 years, showing that you're a responsible person, and that can get you in the door as well. Because you know what? A lot of people are learning, good life skills, being the manager at whatever store or whatever for consistent employment, which is rare nowadays too, that they went to work, they did a good job, they have great references, let's bring them on. I mean, people ain't beating down the door. I mean, applications for the New Jersey State Troopers are down 90%. In Colorado, 70% of agencies said they can't find anyone to take the job. In Chicago, applications are down 82%. In Illinois, applications are down 70%. I mean, I'm not going to bemoan the point, but it's like literally everywhere we cannot find qualified people to take this job. So there's only 2 things that they're going to be able to do, and that is lower standards, which we're seeing across the board, or reducing services to the community and just say, hey, we're not coming out for that anymore. And just, telling the taxpayer, sorry, we know that you're paying the same amount of taxes or even more than you were, but we're going to provide even less services because we can't get anybody to take this job. But, don't worry, we still have our tattoo policy in place. But, and it's so funny because I bet any amount of money that the dudes in that state agency that are deciding that they won't allow a tattoo policy are probably 100 pounds overweight. I'm just guessing. And they're going to tell
probably,
you that.
They're probably 79 years old, right?
Yeah. The tattoos look unprofessional. You know what I mean? We can't do that. But them being, 70 years old, still, with the gut hanging over their gun belt, they're the ones that are going to say that it looks unprofessional. I have the tattoos.
Dude, I mean, we're saying things that everybody knows. And, I will also argue that why would you first lower physical standards, but not college standards, you dumb fucks? Like, and this is this thing that they don't want to say to people like, hey, we have dumber cops. Oh, let's get fatter cops, but more intelligent ones. Like, let me be very clear on something. Most departments in the state of New Jersey do not require a college degree. And they're still having difficulty for the first time I've ever heard of in my life trying to find candidates to even sign up. But we have a guy here who retired recently from an agency and he's talking. He's like, hey, we're trying to hire 2 people. And I said, oh, no shit. He goes, we had 6 applications come across. I go, what do you mean? You guys are in like a county. I got to pay good. He's like, we pay a lot, but we have a 4-year college degree requirement. Could you imagine having to forfeit $100,000 in a college degree in 4 years of your life just to qualify to be a police officer, where literally I can tell you right now from my mouth to God's ears, the best cops I know didn't have PhDs. As a matter of fact, they barely graduated college and it's the most intelligent people in the world. And it alludes to a very famous saying that says A students work for C students, right? Mm-hmm. You ever hear that? Or yeah. A students work for D students. It's a variable, yeah. Not F students because they didn't make it, but A students work for C students. So what does that tell you? If you understand the landscape of college today and how it's this whole thing, I just saw an article this morning, going to have 45 billion times the amount of information available to the regular human being in the next, by 2045. So we'll have 45 billion X on our access to knowledge, but we're still going to fucking schools where literally the game is memorized to take a test when you have everything you know at your fingertips. And then on top of it, we're measuring somebody's capabilities, not on how to problem solve, whether it's personal communication skills or their emotional quotients and control, by how good you take a written test in college to get a degree on something you don't need to know anymore at all anyway. It doesn't matter. And you can learn more on YouTube in 3 weeks than you can in a fucking college setting. That's my rant.
No, no, you're fine. I think you're going to see a huge shift in colleges as more information becomes available. I mean, the brick and mortar model where everybody's taking out $100,000 worth of loans, like, I just don't see that surviving long term. But, you know, I wanted to touch something you talked about on you know, fitness requirements, but also, like, to everybody that's watching, everybody, every young police officer, like, please, please take physical fitness seriously. Stay in shape. And, you know, I'm not going to go into the whole, like, oh, yeah, it could mean your life because you're fighting with a suspect. Like, of course, everybody knows that. OK, everybody knows that you should be able to defend yourself and be able to help your partner run down the street and be able to fight. But, like, our suicide rate is 50 for police officers, 54% higher than the average individual. Our life expectancy is 12 years shorter. Average person lives to 78. Police officers, we live to 66. You need to be taking care of your physical fitness. Like, it's going to help with your mental health. It's going to help with your physical health and prolong your life. Like, working night shifts sucks. Like, I'm tired all the time, but I make sure to try to follow my diet as strictly as possible. I work out 7 days a week because you got to fight off all the negative shit, all the stress, all the anxiety, all that other stuff. You have to be taking care of yourself. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your families. And, like, to these young officers, like, there is no more important quality to have right now than where you're going to get the biggest return on your investment if you're young. It applies to everyone, but right now, self-discipline, whether it's the future at your job, family, finances, fitness, whatever it is, have that self-discipline to watch what you eat, stay in shape, because ultimately this job is going to take years off your life. It's stressful as hell. I've known 4 personal friends who've committed suicide, and I equated to just the horrible shit that they've seen and the horrible toll that this job takes on your life. So please take care of yourselves. Make sure you're working out. Be accountable to one another. Make sure you're talking to people if you have a problem, because I've just seen too many suicides. I've seen too many people turn to the bottle, and we need to start turning this around as a profession. And we all have a responsibility to look out for one another and really, like, be each other's brothers and sisters keeper.
To rewind just a little bit, when we're talking about the candidate pool and how diminished it is, I think I read an article maybe 6-7 months ago where Minneapolis is making a plea, and I think they literally said that they had, like, 2 people take the test and 1 passed. Yeah. Right? Like for the whole minute, like, police department, 2 people. And I make this point again, I know it happened over again. I promise you, if we brought half the staff at Memphis Police Department in, because of the knee-jerk reaction, because of the emotional response to what had occurred, instead of actually taking a stoic response, smart response to what happened here, how do we ensure this never happens again? The first thing they did, our violent crimes unit dismantled. Nobody does that anymore. That solved your fucking problem, you irresponsible motherfuckers. And now on top of that, that sends a signal to everybody that works there, is especially in a time in this country where every agency is now offering $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 signing bonuses. And they come to my classes, Joe, and, like, if they hear, like, because we get big numbers in our classes, so they hear, like, 150 people, 170 people are coming. Bro, they'll send, like, the hosting agency will send the recruiting team, this happens all the time, to sit there and fucking try to suck these people in, and they come through the door. They're like, hey, you know, we offer $10,000. We have people who have bought boots at our conference that they're spending thousands upon thousands of dollars, travel expenses, the boots cost, to recruit other people. Now, hats off to them for trying to do that. Obviously, yeah, they're putting effort in, but the reality is now 30% of Memphis PD is going to beat feet. So what you did in response to a horrific situation that should have never happened in the first place, if actually some thoughtful leadership been put in place, and we weren't kept repeating this thing of, we don't have money, we're short staffed, da da da. Like, You can't, that's not an excuse. This is what happens when you say shit like that, or we're dropping hiring standards, or whatever the fuck it is. So you've, all these politicians have created this environment and still want answers. Here's the crazy thing. We've managed to ignore all that and continue to show up and teach cops. People say, like, you know, why do you do it? Because there's cops. Like, and we're always going to need them. And what are we going to do? We're going to turn our back on them too? No. I've got 50 instructors at this company that I think are the best that I've ever found in this country. Maybe not the best yet. I'll probably find more good ones. Found one yesterday on a podcast episode. Immediately recruited his ass. And the guy has a list of deadly fucking errors. I'm like, you can make this just a goddamn program, dude. And I don't even think you have that much time on. I think you really got it licked. I could see the passion. And I think you teach this and it saves lives. But, you know, that's why we show up and do what we do, because somebody's got to care. And here's the good news. The more people who get the message and want to care and care with you, we start to actually have change.
And, you know, despite all the negative things that we've been talking about, there's still 750,000 brave men and women who put that uniform on every single day, despite the fact that they've been treated like crap in this country for the better part of a decade, spit on, you know, cursed out, everything that's gone on. They're still showing up and doing the job. So, I mean, just a credit to our profession as a whole, because I think most professions would have just folded up by now and been like, nah, y'all can have it because, you know, I didn't sign up. And, you know, it's so funny because you'll hear, you know, journalists who sit their asses safely behind their desk, by the way, criticize cops and be like, well, and also say, well, you know, it's okay that people curse them out and scream at them and do all that. That's what they signed up for. No, we didn't sign up to be treated like human garbage. We signed up to help people. That's ultimately what we want to do. And, you know, it's a credit to y'all how great the training is that you still have officers who are so engaged with their work that they're willing to spend, I would gather most of them, are spending money out of their own pocket to go to that training, even though it should be the agency that's saying, we're going to get you as much training as possible. We want you to be the best trained. And I almost laugh when people talk about, you know, the defund the police movement and the anti-police movement. And it's like, yeah, this is what's going to make law enforcement better for the community. Continuing to crap on cops so that no one wants to do the job. And then we have to take people who wouldn't have met standards just a couple of years ago, and now we're going to make them cops. And you think we're not going to have to deal with that? That it's not going to reap what you sow? And I'm telling you right now, Dennis, just watch a few years from now. You are going to see so many more issues because we lowered standards. We hired a bunch of people that shouldn't have been cops. And we're going to have to pay for that in the long term. And it's just going to perpetuate this cycle over and over again. And you'll have politics. I feel like I'm Nostradamus now. Watch 3 years from now, 4 years from now, when all these chickens come home to roost, you're going to see politicians. Why do we have so many problems with law enforcement? I mean, we've tried all these reforms. And it's like, well, no shit, because we've been hiring bad people just to get bodies in the door because of your rhetoric, because you demonized cops, because you made us the enemy. All the people that we truly wanted, the people that would have been devoted to a life of service, they looked at the profession of police and were like, no, I'm off doing something else. Or to your point earlier, they just beat feet and they went and did something else. That's what's going to happen. I assure you.
Well, dude, they, on top of that, what you're seeing is, and it's clear as day, you don't see an influx of people rushing to be cops in California or be cops in Illinois or be cops at NYPD or Baltimore. Where do you see them going? To the states
Florida,
that have said.
Texas.
Yeah, Florida, Texas, Arizona, right? Places where they can, one, make a good living. So that's they got that good balance of we pay good and we like you. And the most people that live here will respect you, and our politicians have your back for the most part. I'm not saying that Texas without, we know that Austin's a fucking disaster at the moment.
Diet right? Portland, that's what we call it.
Right, right. So, and who's causing that? These fucking numbnuts from California with their idealisms and their fucking, and it's crazy that, I think this, I don't want to misquote this, 1,300 new residents a day in Florida. Where do you think they're coming from? Where do you think, what states do you think they're leaving? California has got to be the number one contributor of where people are coming from and getting away from. And dude, NYPD's next. You know how many guys and girls from the NYPD work in Texas now in Florida? We had a class in Florida. Wayne Ivey hosted it, Brevard County Sheriff. I get set up with the girl who sets us up. I thought I was talking to Marissa Tomei. I'm like, isn't this fucking Central Florida? She's like, come down to the, and she knows who I'm talking about. She listens to this. She's a wonderful human being. But she's like, nah, I came here from the NY. I came down here and I stayed and they want me to be a cop and da, da, da. And I'm like, bro, you talk to half the cops in Florida. They're from fucking Brooklyn.
Yep.
Lee County Sheriff Carmine Marcino is a friend of ours now. Bro, he's from Brooklyn. The guy's a bro, right? He's got a fucking fade. He's got the line in his head. He's a bro.
And credit to their governor, too. Governor DeSantis, he leaned into it and was like, hey, we'll give you $5,000 if you move down here. We'll cover moving expenses. I mean, he's doing everything he can to steal as many cops as he possibly can. And, like, that's a roadmap for every other governor, you know, Republican governor, where people support cops. Like, reach out to these guys, and we'll start filling these spots with people. And, you know, we'll leave the far left urban communities to fend for themselves at this point, because nobody's going to want to be a police officer there.
It's going to be no bullshit, like the 1970s at some point. It's going to repeat process and the 20, 30, 40 years of progression that we've had in cities like New York. I mean, we have Ralph Friedman on a lot. He's the most decorated New York City detective. He's a very good friend of mine. I've been to his house, you know, and he's saddened by things. But again, Joe, I do believe there is hope and a lot of it. And I'm seeing the change, and I'm seeing that we're getting these seeds planted now. And we're not saying these things to draw attention to us. We're saying these things to the men and women who listen to this podcast and saying to them, you're the next generation. It is going to be generational. When these people leave, you will have a real opportunity as a sergeant, lieutenant, captain, deputy chief, chief, corporal, colonel, whatever you're going to be, to hear this now and implement it later. And it's already happened in the state of New Jersey where I started. I've seen that systemic change here. No doubt in my mind, I've seen it here. I'm proud of it. And I go to a conference in 3 weeks. We have our next annual conference. And dude, it's amazing for me because I hear 1,500 to 2,000 people say to me like, hey man, you changed my life. Like, hey, I'm the new chief there. Like, we implemented this thing and da da da. Hey, I'm the police academy director. We actually took a lot of the stuff you said and we're using it now, and we're actually getting really good results with it. So dude, the stuff that we do is not for us to sit here unbeknownst to some people with their casting judgment and blow steam. It's because there's a purpose behind what we're saying. There is hope. I don't think hope ever gets lost. And I think that you and I and other people who have restored hope and faith, and I think it's why people follow us, really understand the truth behind that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, you know, courage is contagious and hope is contagious. And I think the more that, you know, people see, you know, people like you speaking out, or people see me speaking out, and there's just more and more of us, you know, and there's a lot of FOP leaders around the country who are much more vocal and much more speaking out. And we're getting in front of the cameras and we're making sure that people are hearing the unfiltered truth of what police officers are experiencing. And I think the more that not only like citizens see it, but just in general, we have officers seeing it, saying, okay, like there's someone out there fighting for us. There's someone out there that supports us. That's inspiring for people, and they're willing to come out and continue to fight. But also, you know, I hate to put it this way, but it also gives like the police chiefs we were talking about like a little bit of cover of like, hey, everybody's already talking about this, guys. Let's get on the boat. Let's all talk about violence. Let's all talk about the importance of training. You know, 90% of our interests are all lined up in the same place. So let's just make this the best place it can be. But there's also another side to it too. And when you have consistently provided an opposing voice to these radical politicians, or even the ones that maybe aren't so radical, but kind of wanted to jump on that boat, they think twice before they criticize you again. Because the last time they did it, they got hammered. We went on social media, we hammered them. We went on the national news, we hammered them. And when you are relentless on them, they think twice about criticizing police officers over things that they shouldn't have in the first place. Because, like, you know, let's be real. When an officer does something wrong, we all will universally condemn them because we know it makes us all look bad, okay? But when an officer is following policy, training, and the law, we need to stick up for them, and politicians need to do the same. So these politicians that were stepping out and bashing officers when they were doing exactly what they were trained to do, we hammered them. And as a result, they're less likely to do it in the future. So it creates an environment where at least when the officer is doing what they should be doing, we can protect them. We can make sure it doesn't get out of hand, because it's just gotten to a point right now where you have officers getting indicted when they did exactly as they were trained to do in their agency. And I'm sorry, but that's complete BS. If they're following policy, training, and the law, leave them alone. And if they step out of bounds, I'll be the first one to say they need to be held accountable. And they need to be held accountable to the fullest extent to the law. We're not going to get special treatment.
Shifting gears a little bit, I have some things. You said FOP speakers and leaders. And I just want to give you a little story, which I find very comical. I was asked to speak at an FOP event as a keynote speaker, and I was glad to do so. And, you know, they're like, what do you want for a fee? And I'm like, no, like, I'm either super expensive or fucking free. Now, this is an invite for you to reach out to me and say, hey, will you do a class for us for free? If you have a big enough something going on, just know what you're getting into when you get me as a speaker. I mean, you're not going to get somebody who is going to toe the line or essentially tiptoe around things. I use foul language. I think that
I never would have guessed that.
No, yeah. Could you imagine? Guy from Jersey, right? But you know, dude, you're from Jersey. This is just how everybody talks.
I'm from New York. Whoa.
Oh, sorry. My bad.
Oh, I'm from New York. I'm not from Jersey.
Listen, hold on a second, motherfucker. Let's just talk about the tri-state area then. Let's call us all together, right? So, and let me just say something, a tough guy. You have lost your accent, so just let's be fucking clear.
That is true. Don't you fucking dare.
I just know
that there's a distinct smell when you drive down the Jersey Turnpike that I can't put my finger on. I don't know what it is, but I'm just saying there's a smell. Yeah.
We submit. So, dude, I go to this event, and as a matter of fact, some people from the FOP impeded into my time that I had written this program for to give people value at this event so they didn't die in the line of duty. So I'm texting with the one guy who asked me to come, and I'm like, so dude, what was crazy for me, and I got to give you credit because I think I could listen to you all day, and in my head, I'm like, man, how do we get Joe and Street Cop together? How do we get you at our conferences and stuff like that, which it's, I think, naturally going to happen. But dude, I'm on the sidelines waiting to get my turn, and these fucking guys from the organization are up there, and they're just talking about how amazing they are for so long. And I'm literally watching half the crowd in this room go to sleep or get up and walk out. And these guys didn't skip a beat. They're talking the whole time. Literally went from 400 people into the room to 200 people walked out over the course of 15 minutes. And these guys still are going, and blah, 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 blah. And then we're looking at the arbitration and da, 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 and that's what we do for you here. And blah, 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 don't forget to reelect me. And I went, can they not see into the crowd? How do these people have no context that nobody is listening? Nobody cares. And you've bored the shit out of them. And on top of that, you're now going into my time that actually matters. Right. So it's just refreshing to see a guy, and I'm see why you were chosen national vice president, because I'll give credit where credit's due. Your president did a nice job, but these other fucking guys, oh, they were the worst, Joe. What the fuck do we do with these people?
Well, you know, I was glad that I was able to bring some youthful exuberance to the board here at the FOP.
Let's hear this politician response. Let's hear this political response, Joe. Yeah, let's hear this my fucking polished ass motherfucking response. Let's hear that shit.
When you're up there talking and like, you know, like you've talked at enough things, like, you know, when the audience is engaged and when they're not. And like, you have to be able to read the room and be like, man, I got to take this up a notch. And if you're not willing to do that, like you said, just get off the stage. But no, there was definitely a distinct shift. I mean, before I got on the board and before the current president got to be president now, because we came in at the same time, there was just a lack of outspoken, passionate leadership on behalf of the FOP. And I think it was just kind of the old way of, we've always done it this way. Let's just kind of keep our head down and let's not create too many waves. And it's like, no, the entire media landscape has changed. You need to be in the middle of it and you need to be entertaining. That's what I talked about earlier. Passionate, fact-based arguments, because nobody wants to listen to some monotone guy just sit up there and drone on. People want to be entertained. And you know, like, and by the way, like you said, you let me know when you're having a conference you want me to come out. I'll blow the roof off. I love coming out and speaking to cops. I love being in that type of environment. And I just love sharing this message that we're going to fight for cops. Like, this isn't a few years ago. This isn't, you know, the early 2000s or anything like that. We're going to be out there fighting every single day for police officers, because guess what? It's exactly what we deserve. It's exactly what we've earned. We've earned that respect. We go and put that uniform on every single day. So they deserve to have passionate advocates that are going to fight for them when they're doing the right thing and they're doing their job. I mean, it's bonkers to me that with everything that is going on, with all the things that we've talked about and the violence against us and just what's going on in our communities, that not every single person is lining up to support police officers. And like, how hard would it be for politicians, right or left, to just say, you know what? When these cops are doing it the right way, we got to support them. We have to support our police officers. They're a pillar of our society. How difficult would that really be? But they're so afraid of upsetting their base. You know, the super loud base that shows up to city council meetings because they don't have a job and they just want to scream at people. Like, no, we're going to support cops when they're doing it right. We're going to fund them. We're going to train them, as we talked about. Like, these aren't like some pie in the sky things that we're asking for.
All right, so look at your calendar, April 23rd through the 28th, Nashville, Tennessee. I got a room for you. Right? I'll fly in. You don't got to pay anything. And I will give you 15, 20 minutes in front of 1,500 to 2,000 cops.
I can't do April 23rd that weekend on my daughter's birthdays. And I have family coming into town that'll be there that following week for my own birthday. But we'll get on the calendar for another event that you guys are having. And for sure, I'll come out.
2024, brother, April 29th through May 3rd.
We'll
mark
do
that
it
shit in your calendar. We'll put you on the agenda. We'll get that worked out. And that'll be a place where you could. We haven't revealed where that's going to be yet. Fuck it. I guess now's a better time than any time. We're doing our final stages of Orlando. So we're just going to look at Orlando's new place.
And nice,
we're
going to
be a stone's throw away. Yeah, dude, we're going to be a stone's throw away from Disney. I'm actually going there in a couple weeks with my kids to the event center.
Nice.
And yeah, man, so we'll get you on that, and we're going to have a really good lineup for that. We have some real fucking cool keynoters that are going to come to that shit. But I anticipate that will be over 2,000 people at that event as this continues to grow and gain traction. And what's interesting is we have a lot of public support as a company where I'm going out now, and people are like, yo, I just love what you do. And I'm like, oh, what agency do you work for? And they're like, I don't. I just listen to your podcast, and you guys are fucking entertaining as shit. I'm like, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Now, I want to acknowledge you for something, and I want to get your thoughts on it, because a lot of people are afraid to take risk. And let's just unpack risk for a second, because to do anything great inherently comes with it risk. And you have to, when you're taking risk like you are taking, and we'll talk about what risk that is, you got to learn to embrace and dance with the fear. Because doing things like Joe and I are doing, and I don't even mean to put us in the same category, but I do because I think we're on the same path. There's a lot of inherent risk with what we do. And the risk is we might piss people off. We might incur some criticism that we don't like. We might be scolded by other people. But on the other side of the risk is the reward. And there is a saying, without risk, there is no reward. And it's calculated risk. So how and when did you get comfortable with the risk of saying how you felt in a essentially a profession that puts muzzles on police officers through law, SOP, and a fun little game they like to play called, if you know it, say it, insubordination?
Yeah.
Tell me, how did you take the risk, and tell me about how you feel about the risk?
Yeah, so it started when I was the second vice president at our local lodge in Houston. And shortly after I became president there, you know, there was just a lot of things going on, and, you know, officers needed a voice. And, you know, if you're going to be a leader, and I said it earlier, like, heavy is the crown, like, you have a responsibility, especially if you're a law enforcement labor leader, like, you have a responsibility to speak up for your people. You have a responsibility to protect them. And if you're not going to do it, well, then you need to step aside. That's just, I'm sorry. You have to be willing to take that risk. Yes, it certainly is a risk, but it's not just like the job complications that are associated with it. It's like just my own, you know, I'm like my own personal safety and my family safety. Like, I get consistent death threats. Like, you know, I have to make sure my information is scrubbed from the internet. There was a time where we had a contentious ballot issue where someone actually showed up at my house. Thankfully, I wasn't home, because I think we all know how that would have ended. Thankfully, they didn't do anything. They just trespassed. But the point I'm making is that, like, you know, there's threats on my kids. There's threats on my wife. My wife has to keep a social media profile that is not her name. And, like, she even had to get off some platforms because people were attacking her. If anybody has the same last name as me, people go after them on social media. So, I mean, it's a very real thing. But, you know, I'm not saying this to get sympathy or anything like that. Like, don't worry, I'm going to be all right, guys. But the point I'm saying is that this is what comes along with it. But if you're not ready for it, then don't step up. Because you do have a responsibility as a leader in the field to speak up. Otherwise, I'm a hypocrite because I was just calling out all the chiefs and the politicians saying you got to defend cops. Like, yeah, there's risk. But I mean, the reward side of it is just, you know, for me, I want everybody to look back saying that during the worst times that law enforcement ever experienced, the FOP was there and spoke up. During the worst time that it was ever to be a police officer, when everybody wanted to kill our profession, defund us, everything else, there were people that stood up. The FOP stood up. Street cop training stood up. Plenty of other people were willing to stand up and fight in those moments. And, you know, nobody's going to remember our names, but at least they'll remember the groups that we were a part of, that we provided that strong opposing voice. And maybe, just maybe, we saved a lot of people from hitting the door saying, somebody was willing to stick up for me, I'll stick around. And maybe we were able to just hold this profession together because we were willing to step up and talk. So that's the responsibility. And to me, that outweighs the risk.
See, I told you this is going to be one of the best fucking episodes ever. I didn't disappoint. I fucking knew it, dude. I've seen you on fight. I've seen your shit on social media and like your clips on TV and stuff like that. I'm like, and I told Frankie, I said, you got to get him on the podcast because we're going to fucking kill it together. But yeah, we'll fucking do this again, dude. This was great. And do you have anything else you want to add in, Joe?
No, you know what? I just want to say thanks for what you guys do. Thanks for having me on. And for anybody's listening, you can follow me on Instagram at Joe Grimaldi, on Twitter at Joe Grimaldi, on Facebook, Joe Grimaldi, National FOP Vice President. Give me a follow. And just thanks again for having me on and taking the time, man. I appreciate it.
This was awesome. Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at streetcop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then you could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher, so you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out streetcop.com for that offer.